Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class Podcast. I'm Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are here, of course, to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't,
who the bloody hell will?
You hate that bit.
Hate it. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. On that note, who are we celebrating this week, Laura?
Right, so I'm proper chuffed to introduce this week's guest, not only because he is, in my opinion, the Don of the comedy world, but also because I thought we'd never actually get him on here because he is quite literally the busiest man in showbiz. I mean, it's taken some bribery and some onset sickly sweet talking, but I got him here and you are welcome.
This week's guest does it all. He is a comedian, presenter, writer, actor and producer. He burst onto the comedy scene in 2013, winning the prestigious Best Newcomer Award at the Edinburgh Festival. And since then, he's gone from strength to strength.
With his stand-up tours selling out all over the country and a regular face on all major TV and panel shows, he is quickly becoming, and he's going to cringe so hard when I say this, a national treasure. You'll know him best from hit TV shows such as A League of Their Own, Rob and Ramesh V, Just Another Immigrant, Taskmaster, The Misadventures of Ramesh, Judge Ramesh, and of course the hilarious hit show The Ranganation, which, hello, is fresh from a bloody BAFTA win at this year's BAFTAs. Woohoo!
Amazing.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. This is horrible.
Isn't it? It's actually like some sort of torture. Not only a comedian, but he's a bloody good actor too, starring in The Reluctant Landlord, Yonderland, Josh and King Gary, to name but a few.
I hear King Gary's an absolute hoot.
Sure. Not content with all that, he's even penned his own autobiography, Straight Out of Crawley, and he's now running his own production company, Ranga B.
Is there nothing he can't do? No. Most importantly, though, he is a top bloke and one of the nicest guys I've ever had the pleasure of working with. And I really mean that. Listeners, with a smile that could melt dry ice, give it up for my pal, Ramesh Ranganathan.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Do you know what? I wrote that at 5:30 this morning on the train from Glasgow.
That's really nice. Thank you.
No, but seriously, congratulations on the BAFTA.
Oh, thanks very much. Cheers.
Where have you put it?
Well, it's in a we're moving house, so it's in a pile of stuff at the moment. But I'm debating just giving it to my mum because I don't think because obviously she's much more excited about it than I am. Yeah. Obviously, I am excited about it, but my mum, like,
yeah,
she loves all that. When I spoke to her after the win, she's just going to be, oh my god, Ramesh, I'm just walking on air. I can't believe this is our life now. And like, she's so I think I'll probably give it to her because I don't feel like there is a place that you can put it in your house that doesn't make you look like a wanker, really. Do you know what I mean? So I kind of think I'll end up putting it in a cupboard, whereas my mum
will put it
out
else.
Somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
It'd be a nice thing for her. I mean, it's never going to happen, but I think I'd use it as a doorstop.
Yeah, that's a good one, I think. I think that's a brilliant
one.
You wouldn't
want to
stub your toe on that, though, would you?
No.
Toilet is a classic.
Yeah, toilet is a classic. So I think I'll just give it to her.
By way of a birthday present, I just want to save you a gift.
Yeah, it's actually very, very heavy. Because you just take the one away that they give you on the night.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, because I got really smashed afterwards.
Of course.
And then I remember thinking, this could be the thing that I end up killing someone with afterwards. like if somebody came up to me in the street, said, you don't deserve that. Okay, you want it, mate. You're going to get it. It's so heavy. It's a proper, like, murder weapon.
Do you think there's any... Because something we always talk about on this podcast as well, but do you think there's... Do you have any imposter syndrome still hanging about? Like, do you walk in that room and think, yeah, this is my... This is where I belong? Or do you still think, what am I doing here?
No, I think, you know, like, when you were talking about the different stuff I've done, the reason that I work on as many things as I do is because imposter syndrome is, like, my biggest driver, you know? I just don't... I don't ever feel like... I think we all feel like this. It's not unique to me, but no. I just don't feel like I'm inside. I don't ever think there's a moment... I don't think anyone has this. I don't think there's ever a moment where you feel like you've made it or you're settled or whatever. And, like, you know, I constantly live in the fear of all of it going away.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, my agent sometimes says to me, you've got to enjoy things a bit more sometimes, because, like, you do something and then you're looking at the next thing or you're worried about this thing going away and blah, blah. And then you think to yourself, why the fuck am I doing this if I'm going to willfully make myself miserable about it the whole time? Do you know what I mean? It's not the right thing to do. So actually, to be honest with you, relatively recently, I've managed to get to a place where I just think, do you know what? If it does go away, it goes away. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't change who I am. It doesn't make me less happy. It doesn't take away what's happened up to this point. I think it's just, you have to settle with that. But it's easier said than done, that is, to be honest.
So we normally start a podcast by asking people to, our guests, to take us back to somewhere that, like, reminds them of their working class past. Like, where would you take us if you wanted to take us somewhere that makes you think of that?
Well, I had, like, a really massive change in circumstances. Like, I've had a working class upbringing, but it didn't start like that. Do you know what I mean? It was sort of like when you're a child of immigration, or, like, you know, my parents came over from Sri Lanka. And my mum came from a tiny village and blah, 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 and my dad similar. And then it's quite fluid where you're going to, you know, where you're going to be class-wise when you arrive in this country. And the truth is, I was all set up for, like, a very relaxed middle-class upbringing. Do you know what I mean? My dad had got himself a good job. And like, we were living in a nice house. And then suddenly, when we were very young, it all went wrong for my dad. And he ended up in prison, and we ended up moving very, very quickly in the course of, like, 6 months. My mum, my brother and I ended up living in a bed and breakfast, basically, right? So we were all staying in the same room, and that was obviously like defining as a kid. It was like such a outlook, personality, defining experience going through that. And so then what happens is, weirdly, you cling on to, like, these things that provide you a bit of warmth and a bit of relative normality, you cling on to them so, so hard. Yeah. And I remember, like, we were living on this estate in Broadfield in Crawley. Just as we'd got out of the bed and breakfast, we were living in a flat for a bit, and then we got our first house in Broadfield.
Did you get housed by the council?
Yeah, so they put us in a bed and breakfast.
Yeah, because that's where you go before you get housed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they put us in a bed and breakfast, then we went to a flat, and then we got to a house. And getting to the house felt like... unbelievable. I just didn't feel like we were ever going to be in a house ever again. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like a house felt like so mad. And I remember we moved into that house and we couldn't afford carpets for ages. So I didn't ever invite mates around because it was just all floorboards, right? And then I remember once a mate coming around and I remember thinking, I hope I'm just not going to mention the carpet thing. Do you know what I mean? And, like, hopefully he'll think it's like a style decision, or do you know what I mean? It's actually quite artsy. And then, like, he didn't say anything. But then I remember going back to school the next week and everybody was talking about how I didn't have any carpets in my house. Yeah. But anyway, that is a very waffly way to get into the reason that I feel so warm about the thing I'm going to describe, which is basically under the subways by one of the roundabouts in Broadfield, right? Mm-hmm. Is that I made mates in that area, and, like, we used to head off and go, like, there's loads of roundabouts where in that estate, and underneath there'd be subways, and basically under those subways where they met under the roundabouts would be like a gathering place. Like, kids would just, like, go hang out there.
Yeah.
And I'd hang out there, drink, smoke cigarettes, like, get hammered. And just so many of my favourite memories as a kid are of being under a roundabout. It's so mad, but it's just like, first of all, my home life was chaos. And so I was able to not talk about that when I was with my mates, and I'd go and knock about with them, and they wouldn't ever ask any. They didn't know, like, what was going on with, and they were all going for their own shit that they didn't talk about. Do you know what I mean? So, and it was just like, I used to leave the house first thing in the morning and just go and knock about with them all day, And like, so those, and we'd go to different roundabouts depending on how the mood took us. But like,
what's the best roundabout?
Well, the best roundabout is the one nearest, I think, it's the one nearest Broadfield Stadium, which is where Crawley Town Football Club play now. But
why?
Because it's got a bit of greenery around. It's sort
Do you actually sit on the roundabout?
No, you sort of so you've got the roundabout, and then
it's the underpass.
Yeah, the underpass.
Yeah, the
and they all
underpass.
Meet, and there's this like little sort of. Like the it's like bit. When you go yeah. through the subway, it's like when you the
that's
doors
the bit,
first
that's
open.
That's the bit
on
I
Jurassic
go. I'm not going under there. I walk the long way around. Thank you.
I'll go the long way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I used to love we used to go and knock about there. And actually, I think I sometimes think about like because I've got kids now. I think about my mum if she knew that I was going and doing that, she'd be absolutely horrified, right? And then I think, and then now I'm a parent, I start freaking out about what are my kids going to do that I won't know about, that I'd be absolutely horrified about, do you know what I mean?
Because I think about that all the time, because don't you think as a parent, you sort of feel like you're going to somehow avoid that bit?
Yeah.
Think, well, my child won't do that. They will. And of course they will.
Yeah.
And let's hope they do, because otherwise they'd be really boring. And you know they've got to do something. But you do somehow think you're going to avoid that bit of parenting in the like...
It was a weird thing for me to sort of reconcile, was that like... You want your kids to be very, very happy.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you isolate them from all experiences. Do you know what I mean? And so I think you have to just sort of accept that. And my kids are going to get up to some shit, right? All kids get up to some shit. And you just got to hope that you've given them enough of a foundation that they'll make the right decisions when those things happen.
See, this is why I can't have kids. I would never fucking sleep again. I've just got a puppy, right?
Right.
And he's tiny and I'm paranoid he's going to leap off of our balcony on the fourth floor and just splatter on the fucking concrete below.
Yeah.
He won't. He can't even get up on the sofa, but I have had dreams and nightmares about him doing that. That's all I do. And so I think, God, having kids, mate, I couldn't.
I had exactly the same experience. Like, you know that paranoia about hot water being near my kids, right? Like, as in a kettle.
Like boiling,
right.
Yeah.
My brother was burnt when he was a kid.
Right,
like, so that's where I don't need to spend money on therapy to understand what the origins of that were, yeah. But whenever Lisa has about, I would say, 12 to 15 cups of tea an hour, right? And our eldest was like a little baby, every time she's making a cup of tea, I didn't tell her this because I didn't want her to think I was mental, but like, I would just be like on fucking high alert the whole time she was drinking this cup of tea. And then when she finished the cup of tea, I know I've only got a 30 second window of relaxation before she decides she fancies another one. I knew... That was mad, right? And obviously, I know that you've got to be careful with hot, but I knew that was mad. It still didn't help me in dealing with it. It still didn't make it feel any less real for me. Do you know what I mean? I think so many people go through that being in care of someone.
Because you had to move, like, obviously, out your house and go to the B&B. Did you have to move schools as well, or did you stay
I moved
in the
school,
same?
So I was at a really nice school, and then everything happened very, very quickly. So, basically, my mum found out that my dad had been seeing another woman quite regularly. My dad was a bit of a... He used to sleep around a lot, but he'd ended up having a relationship with one particular woman. My mum found out about it, and so their relationship... You know, my dad... The plan was apparently that my dad was going to leave us and go and live with this other woman. So my mum found all that out, and my mum had been in a very secure... She'd never really worked before.
Right.
She'd come over from Sri Lanka at 19. She was like not very independent, you know, and because she hadn't had to be. My dad was sort of looking after everything. And then suddenly her world was kind of like, it was kind of thrown upside down. And then in the course of that, one day we hadn't seen my dad for a couple of days. And so my mum said, I'm going to take you to this woman's house. Can you knock on the door and ask where your dad is, right?
So, oh my God.
Yeah. It's a nice
so it's like
out.
A real treat. We're not going to Thorpe Park. This is
oh
what I'm saying.
How old were you then?
I must have been like maybe 12, 11, 12, something like that. So anyway, she takes me round to the house. I knock on the door and then I say, where's my dad? and
Sorry. Oh, I don't mean to laugh.
It sounds insane as you say it. Just knock on the door. Can my dad come out to play?
Yeah.
And then she said, oh, no, he was arrested 3 days ago.
Oh,
and
fuck.
So my dad had been involved in some sort of fraud thing.
It was a good question after all.
Yeah,
though,
it was
a good
question. Yeah, I'm glad I came now.
Yeah. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you. All right, cool. And so he'd been involved in some sort of fraud, and then he bit, like, there'd been a police sting. He got taken away and he's been held in Leicester, which is where it all happened. And so anyway, the reason I'm telling all that, I'm going into way too much of this, but there's an
no,
edit,
great,
isn't
it? It's great.
But and then I had to move, like, you know, all of that, moving school, moving house, dad's in prison, all of that stuff happened, like,
at such
super,
a time
super quick.
As well, like on the brink of teenage. Yeah, you know, it's
it
different felt, time
like
anyway,
isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
it
yeah,
felt
it's
really mad,
enough.
Yeah. So yeah, I had to all of that changed. But like, in a way, it was like, I'd rather that, I guess, than it happened gradually. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it sort of
yeah.
felt like you get it all out of the way and then we press the reset button now and now we start again, you know?
So what was the second school like? How did you get on
second
there?
School was still great. It was still great. It was like it was actually the school. I ended up teaching at that same school. It's
this
comprehensive, just near our... Well, it's actually the other side of town, but we had to find a place because in the middle of the academic year or whatever. And so... settling in there, to be honest with you, it felt amazing because nobody knew what my background, nobody knew that
yeah,
this was a result of
things
falling apart. So yeah. I just turned up. I was just a new boy. Being a new boy at school gives you, like, you know, everybody's interested in you. And suddenly I was able to, like, do like a almost like a makeover of my own design. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I could just be whoever I wanted to be, you know. And so, to be honest with you, it really, going through that process, school became such an important thing to me as a kid because I wasn't at home. Like,
yeah,
I actually found it
home.
A break to be away from home. Do you know what I mean? I actually was like, wanted more school. I'd love it if they did it at weekends. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I was so...
To get away,
yeah, because it was such a sense of stability and yeah. I made mates there and stuff like that. It was so great. And I feel sorry. I really feel sorry for my mum when I think about it now because it must have been horrendous to go through that and then
yeah.
have your kids kind of
wanna
not want to
yeah.
be at home. Do you know what I mean?
So how was school for you in terms of, like, were you academic? I take it you were, because obviously you went on to be a
maths
teacher.
Well, I was...
Was it maths? Yeah.
It was maths, yeah. I was academic to a degree, but I didn't apply myself at all. So like every single report said, if Ramesh bothered, he could do something, do you know what I mean? But I just didn't give a shit. And I was going for the social, really. And so I didn't really do any work. It was weird. I was sort of like battling two sides of it because my parents, not so much my dad, but my mum was very traditional Asian. You work your ass off. That's the reason we came to this country, is so that you can make something of yourself. And so I still had that sort of drilled into me. But at the same time, I was having such a shit time of it. You just sort of think, what's the point? I just want to have fun. Do you know what I mean? And so I didn't really apply myself at all. And so I did just enough to get to the next stage. So like I did just well enough in my GCSEs to get to do A levels. And I just did just well enough in my A-levels to go to uni.
Yeah.
But I was properly, like, doing the absolute bare minimum. And every now and again, I remember just panicking when somebody said, oh, you are going to fail. And then I would do, like, an evening of work. Or, like, you know, do like for a couple of days, I'd be, like, re-motivated to try and do something. But I was a
yeah,
nightmare.
But still, you must be bright, though, because I'm not academic at all. And when I was told I was going to fail, I just failed. I got a double E in science.
Yeah.
I'll never
well
forget
done.
That, dual science, yeah.
You touched on this a little bit before, but obviously you're a dad yourself
yeah.
now. How does your kids' childhood differ from yours, do you think? Because obviously they're now living with you having a level of success and probably living a slightly different life to the one you led as a kid.
Yeah, I worry about it a lot, to be honest with you, because like... I did just say, they just got everything, these kids.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's so weird because you're sort of like, you're striving to be in a position where you can give your kids everything they need. But I just think, I've talked about it on stage before. I just look at them and I think, oh God, what are you going to become? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I just want them to have a bit of fire in their bellies or whatever. When I was growing up, I remember thinking, I didn't think about having kids, but you just sort of think, when you do come to a point where you're having kids, you're thinking, I don't want my kids to, it's a cliche, isn't it? I don't want my kids to have gone through what I went through
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
so let's make sure that they don't want for anything. And so you have that. But then the other thing is now I find myself thinking, well, some things I want them to, I just don't want to give them all of this stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then like I'm mates with Rob Beckett and Rob Beckett was saying to me, just because they've got it easier and they're getting stuff, it doesn't make them bad kids. I know you immediately start thinking they're going to be spoiled and whatever. And sometimes, I'll be honest with you, they do behave in a spoiled way. Like I'm like one of ours for in particular. He's constantly saying, "Oh my God, this is so unfair! I can't believe my life." I said to him, "You have got. You need to stop there, mate. You need to stop there, mate. You have got no right to even finish that sentence, right?" I said, "You do you know what? I can't even think about what top percent of the world's children you're existing in right now. Do you know what I mean? You cannot even begin to talk like this." And so that sometimes worries me, you know, but those worries are infinitesimal compared to the worries I'd have if I wasn't able to give them what I needed, if I wasn't able to support them in the way that we can do. And, you know, if they've got an interest in something, we are able to make, to let them try that out. We've got the luxury of being able to go, okay, well, let's see how you get on with that. Do you know what I mean? And the condition we make is that if you do decide you want to do something, like whether that be football or theatre or whatever it is, you've got to apply yourself to that, like 100%, you know.
But, do you try and instill in them like working class values or what you feel is working class?
You do try. Like we have tried, but the truth is, sometimes you just can't be asked. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the honest truth of it.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what I mean? It's hard work. Yeah, it's hard work being a parent.
They've got so much shit, right? Like so much shit. And I said to Lisa, I said like, we've got to do something about this. These kids have got so much stuff, and we started, and a lot of the stuff they don't even use anymore, right? So we went through this phase of like going to them, we are going to choose some toys that you don't play with anymore, you don't want anymore, and we are going to go. You're going to come with us to like to somewhere to hand these toys over, whether that be a hospital or a shelter, whatever. And then after a while, you just go, can I be bothered to do this? Or shall I just take the toys myself and they probably won't notice? Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's the truth of it. You know, you want to instill these lessons into them. And we do talk about it a lot. You know, if I talk to my kids, which we do, and even like when we first had our children, Lisa and I were broke. Like when I started doing comedy, we were broke. Like, and so, but the kids don't remember that. When you talk about that to them, you might as well be talking about fucking Henry VIII. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so...
They're like, all right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we get it. You're writing a papyrus and, you know, all that shit. They don't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. So I don't want to... So you don't want to be like that. So you just... I don't know. It's a difficult one, you know? But I'd rather it be like this than the other way.
Oh, my God, of course.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, right, you've gone to uni and then you become a teacher.
Mm.
When did the comedy start? How did that transition happen?
Well, I'd always loved comedy and grown up with it. And when we were kids, one of the things that we used to do was always used to go down to the video shop and we'd have a choice of what to get. And like we all chose comedies. And I started getting really into stand-up and from when I was a kid. And in fact, I did a gig when I was 9. At Pontins Holiday Camp, right? They had a talent show there, and I entered as a stand-up, and I did all stolen jokes from this joke book I had at the time. But I really loved it. And so then I became a teacher. And to be honest with you, teaching was my first job that I thought I actually enjoy this over and above the paycheck. Do you know what I mean? I'd done a really short-term job in pensions, and then I worked at airline caterers, like doing the costings for them, and I hated it. And so teaching was the first job that I'd really kind of thought, I actually really love this. I think even if I was paid half of what I'm being paid, I'd still do it. Like I really, really did enjoy it. And then I thought, well, now I feel like settled in that regard. Let me have a go at stand-up. You know, let me see how I get on. And so I just started gigging. I didn't know about the open mic circuit, you know, where you go and do, like you go in the back of a pub and you're playing.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that. So I just started blagging my way onto gigs and stuff. And then I started gigging in Brighton, because that's like half an hour from my house. And I started gigging there loads and loads and loads. And then just gradually, people that I was gigging for started saying to me, oh, you know, you could probably do this. You could do this as a job if you really wanted to. And I still wasn't sure because I wasn't not enjoying teaching. And then I remember I did a competition called So You Think You're Funny. And they do the semi-final and the final in Edinburgh. And the semi-final, one person goes through from each semi-final and then they go to the final. And I did the semi-final, got through to the final. And that night of the semi-final, one of the judges came up to me and he said, the reason we put you through is that you walked on and we just thought you looked like you're going to be a comic. You just look like a comic. And so that was the first time I thought, oh, shit, maybe I could actually do this. And then from then on, I started
doing
a job.
Did you win it?
No. Who won that year? James Kirk, Scottish comedian.
Oh, okay. Is he still going?
Yeah, he's still going, yeah.
But look at you now. Has he got a BAFTA? Yeah. No.
So
you never tried out comedy at uni or anything? I thought maybe...
No. Do you know what I tried out at uni is I tried to become a rapper at uni.
Oh, right. My God, I wanted to talk about this. Because obviously I've been on the old Wikipedia. And didn't you reach the finals of like... what was it, like a rapper's...
Battle Scars. Yeah, I did, yeah. So basically, there's this...
This is amazing.
So You loved all that, though, don't you?
I love it. I love hip-hop so much. Yeah. So basically, there's this magazine called Hip Hop Connection, which they don't run it anymore. It finished years and years ago. But they had a thing, like it's like a hip-hop classifiers. And one of the things said, if you think you can freestyle, send a tape in and you'd be able to take part in a battle. So I was like, oh, okay. So I sent in this tape of me just
Can
recorded
you remember it?
I do remember it, actually. It was something like, it was really bad. It was like, I remember the opening line being, I bring the butter.
it's already a winner.
Yeah. I bring the butter. You know this ain't the margarine. I'm quick to clean up the scene like my name was MC Window Lean. That was like... Right, so I remember sending that tape in and a guy got in touch with me and said, come to the competition. So it was at the Scala, you know the Scala in King's Cross?
Yeah.
So it was like it was called Battle Scars. I think it then became Jump Off, and that was the big one. That's like Battle Scars wasn't massive, but Jump Off, everybody who's into hip-hop.
But it's freestyle, right? So you can't plan it. You've got to back at the other... Well, dude that's doing it with you, is it that sort of thing?
Basically, it's like it's eight mile, but they kind of added elements to it. So the first one, you come on and you just freestyle, and nobody was freestyling, they had a prepared thing, right? And then the second one, it was just like 8 mile. The third one, and basically what happened was I was like Greece in the Euros. I kept just getting really easy draws. Like the people I kept coming up against were just like dreadful. Do you know what I mean? And so just by dint of the fact I could hold the microphone properly, I was able to go through.
And you could rhyme margarine with Windley.
Exactly.
Which
nobody else, I'll be honest with you, nobody else in the industry was doing at that time. Or since. But I remember like the next round was you had to, they had a full band on stage and you had to give them the beat. So like you would go to the drummer, can you go, and then he would start doing that. And then you go to the bassist, can you go, and then he would start doing that. And then so you'd create this absolutely shit beat.
If we did that now, could you do something? Could you freestyle something?
I mean, I won't be doing the beat, just to be clear. You'll have to do the
you
beat.
Do you hate me for asking?
I don't hate you for asking. I just don't think this will be usable. But we can try it. Let's
can
try
we?
It. Let's do it. Yeah, go
okay,
on.
Okay, so I go...
What am I doing?
Okay, this is good. I'm MC Ranger, here with a banger, on the podcast, talking pure class. Understand, you can kiss my ass if you think I give a ass. That's
what I'm ass and class. We've got it all here.
That's it. That's the intro to the whole series.
I started rapping and couldn't have wanted to abort more quickly from that. I got.
Do you know what? We've been trying to get like a jingle for this podcast. And I think that might be it.
There it is. Right there. Amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, so then I got to the final of that. But by the time I got to the final, it was three of us. The two other guys were actually really good. Yeah. And so I basically got my ass handed to me, like big, like it was. I remember, like, you remember 8 Mile where they're like doing choke across it, like they were doing all that to me. You're dead, bruv, you're dead. You just got done. You're shit. Get him off. Get, like, people just shouting that at me.
Oh my God.
And it was so bad that I was there with some friends and they, not even in a piss takey way, asked if they could leave separately because I was getting like, just people were just like, I can't explain to you how hostile. That rap battle, it was crazy, man. Like, I was walking out just like with my head bowed.
So, like stand-up comedy's like a walk. Whenever you like whenever you're stepping out to a big old stadium, shitting yourself, you think this can never be worse.
Actually,
that freestyle competition that I did.
Make like stand-up look like warm and cuddly.
Oh, mate, there's no way Jonglers on a Friday is going to be more scary than that. Do you know what I mean?
So then you obviously think, right, that's me in the rap world done. Did you?
I retired.
Retired.
I didn't have to make an announcement or anything.
I just knew.
We were done. We were done with that. Do you know what I mean? So it was over.
And then what happened? So you decide, I know what will be easier, some stand up.
Yeah. Well, I just went and started doing gigs and stuff. And the truth is like after I got to the finals, I didn't win Say Think Funny, as I said. But then I started gigging a lot with a view to doing it full time. And then I'd spoken to my agent at the time and they'd said, you've got to go full time, really. You're going to have to give up teaching if you really want to make a proper go at this. And then I said, all right. So we agreed that I was going to leave the Christmas of that year, which was 2011, I think. And then 3 days before I was due to leave school, my dad passed away suddenly of a heart attack. And so then my mum was on her own. We had to just sort out everything with my mum. So then for the first few months of me being full time as a stand up, I wasn't really doing anything. I was sort of just like trying to sort my mum out with her situation. And so it was just like a really bad start. So I had to kind of recover from that. So, and then it gradually sort of took off. To be honest with you, I was going to give up stand up because when we'd focused on what had happened to my mum, it turned out my dad's finances were like a massive house of cards and the house was in the house that mum and dad had been living in was under threat of being taken away and all this. And so we had to like sort all that out. And so then I just wasn't getting any comedy work. And so we were totally broke. Do you know what I mean? And it felt really bad because I was teaching and making a decent wedge. And then I'd basically thrown it away on what I felt was like a vanity project. Do you know what I mean? And I remember like, we couldn't afford to pay the road tax on the car that we had at the time. And I was owed some money from a gig like shortly. And I said to Lisa, let's just wait. I'll get this money in and we'll just have to go without road tax for a few days and then like it'll be fine. And then the car got impounded and taken away. And so I phoned him up and I said, can I just like ask how I get the car back? And he said, it's like a 500 quid fine. Mm-hmm. And every day we have it, it's another 150 quid. And I said, thank you very much. Enjoy the car. I remember putting the phone down and I said to Lisa, we don't have a car anymore. And she was so cool about, like, I could tell in her eyes that she was like, oh my God. But she never told me, I don't think you should do this anymore. She never said, what are we going to do? It was like amazing. But we were broke for a lot. You know, that was, and I think that partly fuels the imposter syndrome as well, because you sort of think, I've been for a period relatively recently of being completely broke, do you know what I mean? So
we speak about that a lot, don't we?
Yeah, it's like that, you know, talking about when you're going to jump off, you know, like, am I going to leave my normal job?
Yeah.
Say normal, you know what I mean? Am I going to leave this job to do it? Because there's always that worry, like you said, like with the, you said, you know, doing loads of work, because there's always that constant worry that it's going to stop.
Yeah.
Or, and also presumably in comedy as well, like, you know, there's a lot of privileged folk that, you know, can just do their comedy and be supported because, you know, they come from a privileged background. And,
yeah.
And that, you know, that can also help someone's success rate move faster because they've got time to keep concentrating on that. And, but it is that moment of going, should I stop the teaching now?
Yeah.
Do I jump off? But
I don't think you ever like outgrow that.
No.
Is it a work ethic? I don't know if it's a work ethic. I think I was just, oh yeah, I've got a working class work ethic. But I think I've just got a financially unstable work ethic.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Sometimes, especially theatre's very, very middle class as an occupation. People often go, why did you take that job? You know, because I work as a theatre director. If I don't work as a theatre director, I will have to work as something else.
Yeah.
And I would rather work as a theatre director. You know, I don't have that privilege of only doing three shows a year and going in between those three shows, I will just sit around and imagine projects. Like, I've never had that.
Yeah.
I've been very privileged in that I got offered enough work to continually work as a theatre director. But I could never be strategic in that way. I feel like I always take too much work.
Yeah.
And I think it's that thing of thinking, if I don't, I don't have anything else to fall back on financially. I've just got to... Well, keep going. I think once you do that, you just carry on doing that. It's in your bones, isn't it?
I think so. I think you can't shake that. And I think you hit on a really good point there as well, is that you think that comedy or acting or anything like that has no barriers to entry, but it's absolutely not the case because, you know, I look at, you know, when you work in TV and you see people that work as runners, or, you know, if you're gigging, like when I was gigging, the first 2 years that I was gigging, you lose money because...
Yeah.
You're paying to get there and you don't get paid for the gig. And you're just trying to try out in the hope that they go, come back and do paid work for us. So that's why we were broke.
And presumably you're gigging, you've just done a full day's work as well.
Yeah,
you're fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
You're not really concentrating on your material like you should have done probably if you'd had all day thinking about it.
There was like a long period where I was being a shit teacher and a shit comic, you know, like, you know, full time. Do you know what I mean? And so like, it's a really interesting thing where people sort of go, well, you just gig and you don't make any money. You go, yeah, but not everybody's got that, and like not everybody can do that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I was lucky enough that my mum was in a situation where I didn't have to give her loads of money. But there are some people that not only are they providing for themselves, they've got to give money to their family, and like, you know, there's all these other things. There's dependence like over and above their immediate situation. So the idea that there aren't barriers to entry is a fallacy. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I think, you know, trying to get to a point where, without getting too sort of preachy about it, but getting to a point where you can help people like that who could be good, but just don't have the facility to go, I'm going to work and make nothing for a year or 2 years. Those systems aren't properly in place yet, I think. You know, we're moving in the right direction,
not,
but I don't think it's right. And I think you're absolutely right. When I started doing stand-up, like, it's a gig mentality, it's a hustle mentality. I'll do this anywhere. I'll go to Loughborough for nothing. If that means that you might give me some work in 6 months, I'll go do that. And then you get to a point where you go, and now am I supposed to switch out of that mindset and like be like, you can come to me or whatever? I can't, you know, it's difficult to be like that.
Only in the last year and a half I stopped teaching. So I teach at drama school.
Yeah.
I mean, that and is actually
amazing.
Kind of COVID forced that a bit.
Right.
And the thing is, I didn't really need to. I could have probably got away with the last couple of years, three years, not teaching on the side. But I was just so terrified that I wouldn't get another series of King Gary, or... that's going to stop. And I still have that now, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm just being an actress.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, Laura, you're 41, fucking enjoy it. Like, you've earned it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Totally. And I think like another thing that fuels that fear is the fact that there are gatekeepers and other people who are in
100%.
Control of whether your opportunities come up. And I think that's part of the thing of like, why I'm so obsessed with creating shows and, you know, and sort of trying to generate things. You sort of want to feel like, I'm not beholden to being flavour of the month or you know, being hot at the moment or being the person that, because you want to kind of insulate yourself from that. But the truth is, we're in a thing where, look, I don't think comedy is anywhere near as difficult as acting in terms of how emotionally and mentally robust you have to be to do it. Because in comedy, I can just keep gigging. And yes, I might die on my ass, but I can then do a gig tomorrow night and try and
get, always. Yeah. I
have auditioned a few times for things and... The the absolute spiral into fucking misery and self-reflection that came off the back of not getting something. And that was one thing that I was doing as an over and above comedy.
Other thing, yeah.
If that is the thing that you have to do, you know, I've talked to Tom about it. You know, just day in, day out, you're getting yourself up again. Here we go again. Do you know what I mean? And doing like, fuck that. Do you know what I mean?
I was talking to Laura about that. My dad's 74. He's been an actor since he was 3.
Right.
And yesterday, he was on holiday in Bournemouth with my mum. Yesterday, he got up, came all the way into town to do an audition. He spent all week preparing for, nervous, anxious, went, oh, I didn't quite do my best because I'd been on the track. I think 74.
Yeah.
And he's still doing that. You know, he's still week on week going in and doing that and putting himself out there like that, which is kind of amazing as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that it is a lot, isn't it, to keep that going.
And then, and then to have the energy to, like, audition for something, you don't get it, and then not wanting everything about that project to fail as a result.
I'm coming at this from a place of privilege now as well, as we all are.
Yes, absolutely.
I still feel very inherently working class. I'm drawn to working class people. I gravitate towards them. And I, you know, I still feel so working class, even though I can't technically say I am.
Yeah.
Because I'm privileged. I've got a mortgage. I own my own property. Do you still feel that? Do you still feel working class at your roots? Well, it's a difficult question, I know.
The thing that we, Lisa and I, have noticed is I can't find a level of thing that I feel comfortable at now.
Oh, now, it's my very God, I was having this conversation the other
day. It's very
day.
Difficult to explain, but, like, say, for example, you go, I don't know, say, for example, we decide we're going to splash out and go somewhere really nice, right? So for one weekend, we went to, like, a really nice hotel, took the kids, like, it's proper, like super luxury, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was really nice, but we went and sat in the restaurant. Something didn't feel right about it. I don't know how to explain it. I felt like I'd broken in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I enjoyed the food and everything.
There,
the food was amazing. Everything about it was great. The staff were great. They didn't do anything. It wasn't like me walking into a designer shop like Julia Roberts. It wasn't like, it wasn't anything like that. It was like, they were all lovely. It was great. But I just said to Lisa, I feel like we've got ourselves in a situation now where we've fallen into this like gap now where, you know, there's some places where, You sort of don't feel out of place, but at the same time you think, I want to go somewhere nicer than this. And then, do you know what I mean? And then you go somewhere nice and you go, I don't feel comfortable here. I don't feel like I fit in here. And so it's like, I think there need to open up some sort of set of resorts and hotels and things like that are just for imposters. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
everybody just walking around going, this is mad, isn't it?
Like,
really mad.
I always think at its best, if you're feeling really good, you feel like you fit in everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm feeling really good, I think, I actually feel like I fit in everywhere. I genuinely can go out and have an amazing time sat with Laura in a KFC.
Yeah.
And honestly, we will have a lovely, lovely time and a proper laugh. And we can do equally the same thing, like sat in the Ivy. We'd have exactly the same time. And then at your worst, you don't fit anywhere.
Yeah.
That's personally, I feel like, oh God, I can get to theatre press nights and think, oh, even when I'm the director, I think, oh God, I'm in the wrong bar.
Yeah.
If you're just not in the, you know, depending on.
And it shouldn't be like that ultimately. Yeah. Is that's how it should be. Everyone should be welcome everywhere. But we live in a country where class is so
still very much a thing.
I do think it's a perception thing. It's an inbuilt thing that actually can actually affect your opportunities. Like one of the things that we had is, like, I was head of sixth form at the school I taught at, and it's a comprehensive school, and we had top achieving kids at A level. And they weren't getting into Oxbridge. And we looked into it. And the reason was, is because they didn't know how to present themselves in interview in the same way that kids from private school could. So there's a culture of talking about academics. There's a culture of being confident in yourself, right? That means that you carry yourself in a different way. You talk aspirationally in a different way.
Totally.
And so what we're having was, we were having kids that had the same predicted A-level grades as those types of kids, but they were just not be able to put that across in an interview situation, you know? And so they were not getting in. And so you think, get to a point where, it's one thing to go, I feel a bit out of place. It's another thing to go, I don't get this thing.
To even get in the place.
To get in the place because of how you carry yourself. And it's like, and I know our job is doing the job or whatever, but there's other aspects to our job, which is turning up to press launches, which is networking, which is like being in interviews and stuff like that, all of that sort of thing that actually also affects your opportunities and also affects how these things come across. And those are things where sometimes you just don't have that inbuilt. You know, I remember like walking into like, I walk into like a meeting in a BBC or something. And listen, I know everyone shits themselves when things like that happen. But part of you just thinks, oh my God, do they know? Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if they just come in to go, listen, mate, we know you don't belong. Like, if you go, we're not going to tell anyone.
Yeah.
But just disappear. You know, like, I think that feeling uncomfortable, I can be all right with. I think that that sort of thing worries me a bit. You know, from you know, I still have a passion for like education and like giving kids opportunities and stuff like that. And that sort of thing frightens me because I think you have done everything you need to do. You know,
and
still you're not making the final hurdle because of just how you've been brought up or, you know, low aspirations or whatever. You know, it's difficult.
The system is in place for to keep us all where we should stay or where they think we should stay.
Yeah, I think that's still true.
So we've celebrated you, your career and your life. But each week we ask our guests who they'd like to celebrate, someone in their life or someone that's been important to them along the way. Who would you like to celebrate today?
Well, before I talk about, basically, the person I celebrate is my mum. But before I go into that, I just want to say, Lisa, my wife, I love you very much and you've been very important.
But well done.
Yeah, thank you. We won't edit that out. Yeah, yeah. But no, look, the truth is, like, my mum, you know, when we went through all that, like, you know, I've talked about a lot what my mum went through. And, like, you know, my mum went from a position of not having a job to becoming a cleaner to just sort of help us, and she pretty much raised us single-handedly for a long time, and you know, and she did all of that, and she was an incredibly resilient character. And so now that, you know, we're in a position where we've come out the other side of it, she is like my hero. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think that she went through so much, and she constantly told me and my brother that we can be anything we want to be, you know. And look, fundamentally, that's not true, but it gives you the self belief.
Yeah.
To try still, do you know what I mean? And she has done so much for me and my brother, and we absolutely wouldn't be anywhere near where we are if it wasn't for her. And the idea of like someone coming from Sri Lanka at 19 years old, never having worked, she's come over for her husband works, and then she finds out that that is completely false because he was going to leave to go and live with another family. So suddenly she's in a situation where she's got to bring up these two children without an income coming in because her husband's gone. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of that stuff. For her to go through that in the way that she has done, you know, how could she not be a hero to me? Do you know what I mean? She's incredible. And look, I'll be absolutely honest with you. She pisses me off now. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you've got to work
regularly
with her now.
Yeah, I've got to work with her now. And she's constantly saying things like, you look fat on that show and blah, blah, blah. And if I'm not going to tell you, who's going to tell you and all that sort of stuff. And we do bicker, but she's amazing. She's amazing.
What's your mum's full name? What's it?
Shanti Ranganathan. Sivashanthani, actually, is her full name.
So we'll be celebrating her today. Ramesh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been amazing.
Thanks for having me.
I just adore you. And I think you're incredible, honestly, mate. And I'm so, so chuffed with all your success. I'm really chuffed for you.
Oh, well, the feeling's mutual. Thank you very much. Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much. Well, that was amazing, wasn't it? I absolutely loved that.
How are you doing over there? Because I know you can fangirl over him a little bit.
Oh, 100%. I think he's absolutely wonderful. It was amazing to meet him, and he's just as lovely as I hoped he would be.
And just a really interesting story, you know.
Amazing story, exactly.
Not actually being born into a working class environment, but then losing everything and how that changed everything for him.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
And how it probably shaped him. Well, that's it for this week, guys. Just to say, you can catch Ramesh hosting the new series of the brilliant The Ranganathan on BBC Two in the autumn. And you can listen now to his Radio 2 series For the Love of Hip Hop, available on BBC Sounds. He also has a regular podcast with Tom Davis called The Wolf and Owl Podcast. And also his excellent book, As Good As It Gets, is out now. And you can catch him on tour from now until June next year. The dates are all available on his website. I mean, does he ever go home?
I'm off to book now.
The Proper Class Podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabee Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music. This episode was recorded at the Umbrella Rooms. Cheers, Ben.
If you want to find out more about Hannah and Laura and why they wanted to do the Proper Class podcast, check out the bonus episode available now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.